Well, let's get this show on the road. My name is Russell Spatz. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Russell.
I'm a member of the Carl Gables Group of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I haven't found it necessary to have a drink since January 25th, 1981. And I'm forever grateful for that. And if I manage not to have a drink, it's touch and go between now and January. I guess I'll have 32 years, which is not a record around here. My sponsor's got 57 or 58 years, something like that. And yeah, just don't drink and don't die. You'll get there, you know what I mean? I've been working on those two deals, you know. So we're in the middle of, we're sort of starting off on a step series, and I've been doing this, doing step series like this, and I do quite a few of them. I'm going to start another one at the Little River Group on January 10th. And, you know, we all have our gifts, our little deals, and the Lord has chosen to, I'm a lawyer, so I'm a paid bullshit artist, so. It's a privilege. It really is a privilege. You know, Bill Wilson, and we're going to talk about this a little bit, actually, but I'll sort of give you a preview. Bill Wilson, Alcoholics Anonymous number 3, I might have talked about this last week. Even if I did, I'll repeat it. Alcoholics Anonymous number 3, Bill Dotson, pinned one of the most important parts of his staying sober on a statement Bill Wilson said to his wife, Henrietta, when he had just a couple of weeks sobriety. And it's in the big book under Alcoholics Anonymous number 3, where he said he was sitting there listening, he wasn't even part of the conversation, and Bill, and this sometimes happens, people, you will in AA over a period of time, and I'll tell you, there's nothing like time and experience. There's nothing like, we all have opinions, and you know, alcoholics, we're all brilliant, we all know more than anybody else, but I mean, when a man with experience meets a man with money, the man with experience will walk away with the money, and the man with the money will have walked away with an experience. I can tell you that. It's many are called, but few are chosen, you know. And there's a lot to be said for giving a hand to the guy who is still standing after 20, 30 years. And with all the bounced checks and all the inequities and all the, what do they say, the wrongdoings of others, fancied or real, have the power to actually kill. I mean, most people are emotionally disturbed and frequently wrong in this world with all the stuff that's going on around you to live the good purpose and to come out the other end, you know, not only sober, but not living a life of quiet desperation and feeling good about yourself and other people is a hell of a feat, which can only be managed, in my opinion, through a relationship with the Lord, with God. But in any event, story that's told by Alcoholics Anonymous number 3 in our book. I'm going to refer to probably a couple of books here today. I know you all know about the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, our basic text. This is a book called Dr. Bob and the Good Old Timers. A lot of people are unfamiliar with it. This is essentially a rendition of what the first 100 did between 1935 and 1939, which you'll come to understand, I feel, is very important. And, you know, listen, you may not think anything is important, you know, what does it matter what I think? I mean, I happen to be doing the steps. They asked me to do it, so I'm going to, this is all my opinion. You don't have to agree with me. And I'm here to, you know, comfort the disturbed and disturb the comfortable. So, you know, it's, the bottom line is so the only thing I have to share is my knowledge that I've gained in the program and through my experience and what's working out for me. It may not be your deal. You know, I'm not going to fight you over it. I'm not going to debate you over it. You go out and do your deal. We'll meet back here, I'm not going to get into it, but we'll meet down back here 10 years later and we'll see how everything's working out if we're both alive. But I'm a big advocate of Dr. Bob and the good old times, knowing the history and understand the facts. And I'm gonna do a lot to relate facts about the history of Alcoholics Anonymous and what this is all about, because very much like the game of telephone. Y'all familiar with that game of telephone where you have a guy at one end of the room, and then you have somebody at the other end of the room, and maybe you have 20, 30 people in between them, and somebody whispers a word or a phrase into the first person's ear, and then it goes to the second person's ear, and the third person's ear, and the fourth person's ear, and the fifth, and it goes all the way down to the 20th or 30th person, and then it's all, by the time it gets down there, it's all garbled. And, you know, understand something. This is not, I mean, I hate to break this to you, based upon what I've seen in here, and I love Alcoholics Anonymous, I don't want you to think I'm deprecating it, but this is really not Well People's Anonymous. And you can rely on our literature and the facts, and you become a devotee of that and study that and follow the people that study the facts wherever they lead, whether it makes you feel good, bad, or hurts your feelings or not. Or you can rely on what's called the wisdom of the rooms. You know, the people that say we're spiritual, not religious, and, you know, put down priests and say I'm a recovering Catholic and all that sort of stuff, you know. And when the book says we lose all prejudice even against organized religion, we begin to see where religious people are right. We encourage church membership. I mean, how do you have a book that says that and somehow have an underlying feeling throughout Alcoholics Anonymous today, 75 years later, that somehow religion is bad? When the founders of this group and the way they did it between 1939 and 35 and 1939 felt exactly the opposite. Exactly the opposite. And as a matter of fact, clergymen had a lot to do with putting together AA, which sprang from an evangelical Christian fellowship called the Oxford Movement, the Oxford Group. We're going to talk about that. And that's why in chapter 6 of the 12 and 12, when it says this is the step that separates the men from the boys, you know, the people that are spiritual. I can tell you this. I want to tell you this. I'm not spiritual. I lived myself at 30. I'm 63 years old now. I came in AA when I was 31. I've lived myself without AA for 31 years. I know exactly what I am. I'm very clear as to what I am. And it's not. I do not have the quality of spirituality. You guys obviously have the quality of spirituality. You're very spiritual. And you can take that and feel good about it and go home at 3 o'clock in the morning and say, thank God I'm spiritual. I have the quality of feeling, being self-centered and selfish. And left to my own devices, all I do is think about myself and worry about myself. I'm not spiritual. And I came into Alcoholics Anonymous. I followed some men around. I discovered I was almost force-fed the concept of God. I ultimately developed a relationship with God. And anything you see in me that you think might even look like spirituality really is Him working in my life. It has nothing to do with me. Anything that's attractive about me or anything you like about me has nothing to do with me. Trust me. Because if he was taken out of my life and I didn't have this relationship, he wouldn't be listening to me and I wouldn't be attracted to you. I can tell you that right now. It has really little to do. I don't take credit for my sobriety. It has nothing to do with me, which has a lot to do with what we're going to talk about tonight and how it works in our lives and why it is so important to have a relationship with God and why people drink again. And even if they don't drink again, why people stay sober but live lives of quiet desperation and are not happy. And being happy is very important. Although we all have our difficult times, as you know, in Vision for You, it says here and there, an alcoholic says once in a while, feel better, look better, having a better time. We laugh at such Sally. We know he's going to try the old game again. Soon he'll know loneliness, as few do, because he's not happy with his sobriety. And I've seen him drink at 5 years, at 10 years, and 20 years. And we're going to talk a little bit about that deal. But in any event, in Alcoholics Anonymous, so I'm going to quote liberally from books like Dr. Bob and the Good Old Timers, which is a rendition of what they did between 1935 and 1939. And I can tell you this, even though this is labeled Step 2, this is going to be like Pulp Fiction, you know, where it starts in the middle, goes, bounces around. You're going to have to pay attention because I'm going to make some hard rights and some lefts and everything. And you go to sleep, you blink your eyes, you go to the bathroom, you're going to say, where's he going on this? Because through every step we're talking about, you're going to, depending upon where you're at, and what you hear and what's going on inside of you, because we don't see the world the way it is, we see the world the way we are, it may be a second step deal for you, it may be a 10-step deal for you. It's going to be all the steps you're going to be involved in this thing, and we're just going to do it for 12 weeks, and that's the way it's going to work. So in the book Alcoholics Anonymous, we're going to talk liberally about what happened between 1935 and 1939. It also goes a little bit past 1939, because in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, y'all know that AA started in 1935, right? You know, does everybody know that? It started in 1935. And the big book was published in 1939. And you know, in the big book, one of the parts that they read before every meeting is they say, rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. Isn't that right? Didn't we read that today? Mm-hmm. So in 1939, 100 or so alcoholics wrote a book, and they said in the book, rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. And we know, based upon just sheer logic, that their path did not include reading the big book. You get that, don't you? You understand what I'm saying? Because if you don't understand that, we're going to have a big problem. In other words, when you read, rarely have we seen a person fail, slowly followed our path, and they write down what they perceived their path was, this is their best writing, their best thinking as to what their path was, but this was not their path. Somewhere along the line, now this is good enough to start off with, somewhere along the line, if you really do get into the second step and you want more, you want more. Anybody want more? You know how it says we've experienced much of heaven and we've been rocketed, you know, it says the great fact is just this, not this, we've experienced much of heaven, we've been rocketed into the fourth dimension of existence, which we could not even dream. Our whole attitude towards life, towards God's universe has been totally revolutionized. You know, he's become the center centerpiece of our lives. We are absolutely convinced that he lives in our hearts and has miraculously changed. You know that part they say in the big book? Well, you know, if you're not experiencing that every second of the day, then you're just not experiencing what they were experiencing. Doesn't mean you can't. I'm not putting you down. I don't want to get you upset. But I think one of the things we have to, you know, God forbid I should get you upset, but you know what it says, the spiritual axiom, whenever you're disturbed, no matter what the cause, there's something wrong with you. So if I say something that upsets you, I guess you should give me $10 for like a spiritual MRI, you know. Yeah. Right? This is what we talked about last week. And then what happens, I am sober today and have been at peace with myself for a long time based upon, because of old-timers upsetting me for 20 years. Upsetting me, getting me mad, saying things that I thought was a bunch of crap, getting me mad and walking out of the room, and why did he say this, and getting mad at him, and talking and fuming, and then all of a sudden somehow getting back to the big book, and you know, after I got past my initial feelings of being mad, I said, well, man, I really remembered the spiritual axiom, and I didn't want to hear that, because I was mad, and I was angry at him, but he deserved it, because I never hated anybody if they didn't deserve it, you know what I mean? He had done something, whatever he did was to piss me off, and, you know, but finally I sort of came around to the AA way of thinking, there must be something wrong with me, even though he is a jerk, you know what I mean? And I'd look at that, and I'd write it, and I couldn't figure it out, because my brain didn't handle it, and I'd, you know, and then I'd finally write it down, and I'd write some things down in an inventory list, and I'd talk to my sponsor, and I'd pray about it, and then all of a sudden, I'd see something. I would see something. I don't know what it was. It would occur to me. I'd say, well, you know why I'm mad at him? I'm mad at him because he's what he said. I didn't like the way he said it. It is what the big book says. It is a deal. But I don't like the way he said it because that means I've got to stop doing this, or I thought he was criticizing me, or maybe I used to tell my sponsor, you know, I'm sensitive. He says, no, Russ, great artists are sensitive. You're just touchy. You know what I mean? And alcoholics are touchy, you know, and I get mad and everything. And then all of a sudden I pray about it and I talk about it and I'd see something about myself that I didn't see before. Maybe I'd see one of these fear things. You know, it says selfishness, self-centeredness. That's the root of our trouble, driven by 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, and self-seeking. We step on the toes of others. They retaliate because we're selfish. It says it comes in 100 forms, which means if you are absolutely sure of 10 forms of selfishness, you figure them out, and you suspect 10 more, you only got 80 more to go that you're not even sure of, you know? And maybe because of me pissing you off on a particular night and you're working on it 2 weeks down the road because it's driving you crazy and you can't stand it. You know, you've already told all your friends what an asshole I am and all that sort of stuff. And you've gone through the list. Maybe you will learn something about yourself by working on that deal. Because what happens is you start realizing, why does that guy bother me so much? I mean, the world bothers me, but why does that guy bother me? And so I work on that deal. And somehow I get to a resolution by talking to my sponsor and doing all these little steps in this thing where I see something as to why it actually bothers me. You know, I used to say things to my sponsor. You know, I think I talked about this last week, and he said, I complained about a guy bouncing a check on me, and he'd say, and I'd be all frosty and everything. I'm going to, you know, how can you do that? I can't believe it. And he said, well, listen, if it didn't bother you, how would you feel? And I said, what do you mean? He said, well, if it didn't bother you, how would you feel? So what do you mean if it didn't bother me? Well, if it didn't bother you, how would you feel? If it didn't bother me that he bounced a check and I'm going to bounce me, if it did, how would I feel? He says, yeah, if it didn't bother you. If it didn't bother me, how would I feel? Yeah, if it didn't bother you, how would you feel? Well, if it didn't bother me, I'd feel fine. He said, there you go, and you walk away. What you think about pretty much solves the problem, huh? You know, and because he'd say you're upset because you're upsettable, because you let things get to you. You know, it's not so much what's going on in the world. The world will always be the same. The world will always say, the question is, how do you deal with the world? How do you react to the world? So somehow, some way, I work out this thing. Why did what Russell said bother me? I worked that deal out. And I see where there's a certain amount of truth in there, and that's what bothers me, because if he's right, that means I have to change, and I don't want to change, because, you know, I'm brilliant, and I know everything, and, you know, my chief characteristic is defined, and I don't want to change, and if he's right, I got to change, and you want something? He is right, and I need to change, and I don't want to change, and all of a sudden, I see something about myself, and all of a sudden, Russell doesn't bother me anymore. And then I realize something, that there's 20,000 Russells been in my life. My ex-wife was a Russell. My boss was a Russell. And I start realizing that now that I got that thing straightened out, there's a whole bunch of other things on the planet Earth that's been bothering me a lot, and all of a sudden they're not bothering me anymore. And you run into enough people that tick you off, and you work on it that way. You work on 100, maybe 100 different personalities, 100 different people. One day you wind up and you're 30 years sober, and, you know, crap doesn't bother you anymore. You're not botherable. I mean, I'm not saying it's perfect. It's like anybody have the mute... You know how you have a TV set or a radio deal or something like that, and you press a thing and it mutes the volume? So I got a thing at home. I got one of these things at home where it sort of like does a soft mute and then a total mute. I don't know if anybody's seen that. You know, like you'll have a radio up and it'll be blast, and you go like this, bam, and it brings it down to like a quarter of the sound. It's very low. And then you hit it again and it goes like there's no sound at all. And somehow, for the last like 10 years... You know, my life has been playing, it's been playing on like quarter sound mute. I mean, I know there's stuff going on. My wife is saying stuff, my kids are saying stuff, checks are bouncing, stuff is going on. You know, when you first come in here, I'm going to kill them. You know, everything is like, they could drop a pin in Benghazi. You know what I mean? They could drop a pin. Just one way. Anything is worth feeling sorry for yourself. It may not feel like feeling sorry for yourself. It may feel like being angry or upset. But anything is, it's like the world is there to just upset the crap out of you. And you're trying so hard, you know what I mean? And it's just that, and somehow, some way, I don't think the world's changed. The traffic is still there. Everything's still there. Everything's still happening. And all of a sudden, it's like at a quarter mute. You know what I mean? Like everything's muted down. And you start thinking, well, you know, when that first starts happening to you, you start worrying. You say maybe because, you know, you're so scared, you don't want to miss anything because you might get hurt. But after a while, you get used to it, and it's just a good deal. So Bill Wilson, when he was talking to Henrietta, he said this. He said to her. He said, Henrietta. He says, the Lord has been so wonderful to me, curing me of this terrible disease, that I have to keep talking about it and telling other people. That's what he said. It's conference approved. It's in our big book. Actually, there's nothing that's conference disapproved. But I'm going to read that to you. You know, there's a great deal of knowledge and wisdom you can get out of not skimming over this stuff or skimming through it. You know, one of the things I'll get into, not in this session because it takes too long, is how alcoholics really don't see stuff. You know, it's just one of the axioms of being an alcoholic that I've learned with alcoholics is that when something, and I'll explain this to you later on in a different deal, but when an alcoholic hears, sees, or is told something he doesn't like, it confuses him, and he gets mad at it, and he makes it go away. So don't be so sure just because you read the entire big book 15 times, you actually know what's in it. You know what I mean? Because we have a tendency to skip over large portions. You know, all those portions where we talk about God and turkey, we sort of skip over that stuff. And you ask somebody, what's the big book all about? And they say, yeah, acceptance is the answer to all our problems. And they think that's what it's about. And acceptance is, I hate to clue this on you, it's not the answer to all your problems. You know, I mean, it sounds good, but it's probably not. Maybe courage is sometimes the answer. You know, faith is always the answer. But in any event, I want to read this page 191. Let's sort of look at... Let's just look at a couple of pages, you know, out of these books and see whether we can learn a little something. This is a story. This is a testimony. Page 191. It would be hard to estimate. This is, Bill Dodson wrote this when he had about 15 or 20 years, and this was for either the first or second, maybe for the second edition of the big book. And he was the man on the bed. Anybody ever seen that? Do we have a picture of the man on the bed here? Yeah, hey, I'll tell you what. Did somebody bring it down for me? I want to show it to everybody. If you haven't seen it, it's up there. It's a man. It's a very well-known picture in AA, and it's a picture which is supposed to depict Bill Dodson, who got sober prior to the writing of the big book, he was Alcoholics Anonymous number 3. Okay, got it? Who was number 1? Bill Wilson. Who was number 2? He was Alcoholics Anonymous number 3. Stayed sober forever. Helped a lot of people, okay? He was, Bill Wilson and Dr. Bob went to see him in the hospital. He was the attorney who had just, you know, clunked the nurse, you know, with a fist. And they went to see him in the hospital. And he's sitting on the bed. If you look, the picture's right up there. He's sitting on the bed. And next to him, in a suit, he's on a T-shirt. Skinny old guy with a T-shirt. And next to him, if you've never seen it, just go look at it. There's a two men. One's Bill Wilson. The one's Dr. Bob in suits. And they're talking to him about the program of recovery. And one of the men, I think it's Bill Wilson, has a book out like this. There's a book out. Somebody get me that picture.
We haven't been able to find it, Russell.
Yeah, so it's got a book out like this. And the book is the Bible. It's the Holy Bible, which is how AA started and what's it about. It's all about the Bible. It was about, they had quiet times. They did a lot of stuff, you know, back then. They had a lot of prayer meetings and stuff like that. That was before we got cool and had the big funnel and everything. And tremendous amount of power. You know, they didn't argue a lot about God and stuff like that. They knew that was the answer. So in any event, they had the Bible open. And so this, he's if you've been sober for a while, or maybe even not so much, what you realize is even though you're sober 10, 15, 20, 30 years, I've been to thousands of meetings, literally, I'm not even sure, 9,000 meetings, 1,000 meetings. I don't remember all the meetings I've been to, but I remember a few like it was yesterday. And what happens is as you go along in life, you run into people, you run into situations that drastically change your... Now, probably all the meetings went into the mix to change me into the person I am today. But what happens is there are certain, whether you call it epiphanies, there's certain things that happen in your life that it may have happened 20, 30 years ago, but I remember it like it was yesterday. And I remember like the way the room looked and the way what my sponsor said, you just remember it. And it becomes a major thing in your life. So in giving this his story, Alcoholics Anonymous number 3, when he gave his story, this is a major, major part of his life that he remembered when he was 2 weeks sober. 2 weeks sober or less. There could be things that happen to you when you're 2 weeks sober that can change your entire life. And you want something, not only did it change his life, this thing that he heard 2 weeks sober, which had to do with God. You know how they say, you know how the wisdom of the rooms, watch out for the wisdom. You know how the wisdom of the rooms say, don't talk to a newcomer about God? No, that's what they need to hear about. That's what AA is all about. You know, that's not AA. You understand that? That's not AA. Because you want to know something? In AA, on page 29, it says the following. This is what it says on page 29. It says, further on, clear-cut directions are given showing how we recover. These are followed by 42 personal experiences. Each individual in the personal stories describes in his own language and from his own point of view the way he established his relationship with God. That's an AA story. That's why they say in Working with Others, he says, burn the idea into the newcomer's mind. Burn the idea. He says, when they say they need this, they need that, and they say nonsense, job or no job, you can recover if you trust God and clean house. The only thing that's important, now, the people who really don't want to hear about God are not newcomers, or people who have like 5 to 10 years who haven't delved into it, because they don't want to hear about that, because then they might have to do it. And they're sort of satisfied the way things are, because they got their car back, you know, and things like that. They don't want to hear too much about God, because God forbid if they're not doing the God thing, and the newcomer says, how do I find God, they're going to feel kind of uncomfortable. And God knows alcoholics don't like to be uncomfortable. So those are the real people in the rooms that don't want to hear about it. The people who are resting on their laurels. But that's the whole of the story. So you don't want to rely. So here's what's going on. On page 191, this is what it says. This is what Alcoholics Anonymous number 3, looking back on his life, said. It said, it would be hard to estimate how much AA has done for me. I really wanted the program, and I wanted to go along with it. I noticed that others seemed to have such a release, a happiness, a something I thought a person ought to have. I was trying to find the answer. I knew there was even more, something that I hadn't got. You ever had that feeling? I remember having that feeling the first 10 or 15 or 20 years. I remember having that feeling. I remember going into rooms, and I wasn't drinking. And sometimes I felt good, and during meetings I'd feel good, and I'd go out in the world and, you know, want to kill myself again and have all the crap you go through in the world until I got back to a meeting. And you would see other people in the room, and maybe they'd have 20 or 25 or 30 meetings, 30 years, You'd see him talking. You'd know. It's like tight. Listen, I play golf. I play golf once a year. I play golf, and Tiger Woods plays golf, right? And I use very nice Titleist clubs, and Tiger Woods uses nice clubs, and I use, you know, Titleist golf balls, good ball, and he uses those golf balls, and we probably play on the same course, but I promise you, we're playing a different game. There's a different game going on, you know what I mean? Well, I would come in here, and I'm doing AA, and Joe Snyder was doing AA, and I'm reading the big book, and Joe Snyder's reading the big book, and I'm saying the Lord's Prayer, and he's saying the Lord's Prayer, and we're doing everything the same, except we're playing, I got to tell you something, we're playing a different game. Because I'm a thumb-sucking crybaby going to discussion meetings, sucking my thumb or crying about everything every other second. I'm living life on the edge in crisis. Why is this happening to me? You don't understand. I'm an if-onlyer. I'm a yes-butter. I'm a you-don't-understander. And, you know, life is just tough and difficult. If I'm doing all this, it's been 3 years, and why do I still have money and all this stuff? And he's like, whoa. He's like, you know, he's like sleepwalking through life. You know what I mean? This guy's like, and I figured, you know, when you see guys like that, you figure, well, he must have $1 billion in the bank and sex every night, whatever it is. And then you find out that he's like dying of cancer or something's gone. He's got all these problems. It doesn't hardly affect him. You say, what the heck? And you marvel at these guys. And so you follow them around, you know. So I would follow these. I'd say, Ray O'Keefe is doing the steps. And I would follow these guys around. Because I wanted to know what the answer was, and they would try, and I would know, you know, you can tell by looking at people what the story is, really, and listening to them, and I knew that this guy was comfortable in the skin, and he had something going off, and I figured maybe I could find out the answer, and you know, it's so inscrutable, because they'll talk, they'll tell you the answer, and you walk away, and you're still shaking your head, because you don't have it, because I'm a true alcoholic, I want it like that, you know, he says, men and women drink because they like the effect produced by alcohol. Alcohol is not disease, it's a symptom of the disease of drinking, because we drink because that's the best stuff available to solve our problem. Our problem is sobriety, because if you're sobriety, men and women who are sober drink because they like the effect, because they're restless, irritable, discontented, selfish, self-centered, feel crappy about themselves, and the only thing that seems to work is that alcohol stuff. And when that stops working, what do then? So, you know, the bottom line is, I'm sitting here trying to figure out, I don't have my anesthesia anymore. I don't have the alcohol. I mean, I'm using other things. I'm using food. I'm using sex. I'm using everything else in the book to try to solve that problem. It doesn't look bad because the world's using that stuff too. But it's still not solved. It's not filling the deal. And here's some guy named Joe Snyder or Ray O'Keefe or these guys. And they apparently have the problem solving their life. And I don't understand how it's solved. And I want it to work like alcohol worked, because alcohol worked like that. Alcohol worked immediately. A pill worked immediately. The marijuana worked immediately. The coke worked immediately. The sex worked immediately. And it seems like you gotta go to like 50 meetings over a period of 10 years to get the effect like one jigger of scotch gives you. You know, I mean, it's like unbelievable. But that's the way, you know. It's just like in the book of James, which is one of the books that, you know, we were almost called the James Club. The book of James, first chapter of the book of James, he says, "Rejoice when you have trials." You know, what do you do if you're an alcoholic and you have trials and tribulations? You complain. You whine and feel sorry for yourself, right? You know what Alcoholics Anonymous says? You know what it says? Rejoice when you... It says in chapter 7 and 12 and 12, it says we begin to see the value of suffering. How you imagine that? The value of suffering? I'm suffering. This is great. You know what I mean? This is good shit. This is good shit, you know? Hey, give me some more of this, God. It's really working out for me, you know? Said to Ray O'Keefe, you know, I told you this last time. I said, when am I going to... I wanted the promises, you know. So I said, when am I going to have financial security? He said, never. Never. I said, what do you mean? No, I mean, I want the promises. Financial security. You're never going to have it. Never going to have financial security. I said, no, the book promised me I'm going to have financial security. He says, nah, it doesn't. Yes, it does. It says I'm going to have financial security. It's going to leave me. The insecurity is going to leave me. He says, doesn't say that, Russ. I said, wait. He says, open up the book. So we're driving. I open the book. He says, read it. He says, fear of people and of economic insecurity relief. He says, see, you're always going to be broke. It just won't bother you. Thanks. Appreciate that. Well, whatever. Well, you know, what does it say? If it didn't bother you, how would you feel? You know what I mean? Yeah. So in any event, so what happens is, getting back to this deal, so I wanted what these guys had, so I'd follow them around. Because I knew there was something more. I remember, you know, once you get a taste of this deal, a taste, you just have to have more. And, you know, it's satisfying. The not drinking thing, you know, joining the not drinking club, is satisfying, what, for a week or two or a month or 3 months or something, whatever the heck it's satisfying for. But then if you're a true alcoholic, you need more. Mm-hmm. Not drinking is just not good enough. You need more. I got to get rid of this self-pity. I got to get rid of this depression. I got to this feeling sorry. I got to get rid of this crap. I need more. When am I going to get more? And you know some, the more, how long did it take you, how many years, how many decades before you got ready to submit yourself and surrender just a little portion of yourself and your thinking and your old ideas so you get to the point where you could accept the fact that you're an alcoholic and give up the alcohol? So what, 10 years, 20 years, 25 years? So how many years do you think you have to surrender and go through? How much pain do you think you have to go through until you realize that getting laid is not important? When the entire world is running Viagra commercials saying if you're really upset with yourself, the real problem is you're not getting enough sex. And you think that you're maybe stupid because that's the deal. Or your breasts aren't big enough. And the entire world is running stuff because that's how they make money. And every poster you see, every movie you see, every movie star you see, the entire world seems to be conspiring to let you know that you're insufficient and you're not good enough. And if you only be Brad Pitt and Angela Jolie or some movie star, and you know something, they don't even feel good about themselves. I'm not talking about them. I don't know them at all. But I mean, you understand what I'm saying? They got their own problems. It's all illusions. It's all Hollywood. It's all made up. And that's why we say, well, the President of the United States, why is he having sex in his office? Why is this? We see all these stars, and they're stumbling, they're bumbling, and everything, and nobody knows because they're all chasing after the same crap that this world is telling us. And the only people that are talking AA are in AA rooms for one lousy hour, and God forbid they should go 5 minutes over. You know what I mean? And then we go, and then we get to go out there where they're telling you a whole different way of living, which is designed to kill you. And even in here, sometimes you don't get the straight scoop because they're more worried about their cars and their, you know, all that sort of stuff. You know what I mean? It's any wonder that only 0.5% stay sober for more than 20 years. You know, that kind of deal. And so I wanted more, just like this guy wanted more. I was just like this guy. It would be hard to estimate how much AA has done for me. I really wanted the program and I wanted to go along with it. I noticed that others seemed to have such a release, a happiness, or something I thought a person ought to have. I was trying to find the answer. I knew there was even more, something I hadn't got. I knew there was something I hadn't got. And I remember one day, a week or two after I'd come out of the hospital, this happened a week or two after he came out of the hospital. I mean, I literally, when I came in here, I really did have two neurons working and they were waving goodbye at each other. I couldn't complete a sentence. It's amazing how God can work in your mind, you know, and get through to you. You know something? You know what's the hardest thing in the world? To teach a smart person a spiritual truth. Because I can promise you this, you will never, ever, listen, I've got departmental honors in mathematics. I was going for my PhD in algebraic topology. You know, I thought the biggest thing in the world was known as the Schrodinger wave equation. Or, you know, or quantum mechanics or stuff like that. Graduated law school. You know, I worship my brain. I knew I was smarter than you. There was no question in my mind that I was more brilliant than you. The hardest thing in the world is to teach a person a spiritual truth when they're so damn smart. You know, and the only way that'll happen is if you somehow get humbled, and Booze humbled me. And I brought my sponsor, who didn't even graduate sixth grade, into my office. I showed him all my degrees. I said, these are all my degrees. I had about 30 of them on the wall. And he said, you know, Russ, rectal thermometers have degrees, and you know what they do with those. You know, I thought I had the wrong sponsor. I had exactly the right sponsor. And you may have to, God, you know, listen, the greatest thing that happened to me in Alcoholics Anonymous is I got dumbified. That's why at the end of this book, all these smart people, all these smart AAers that couldn't stay sober, at the end of the book, you know what's the last thing they say? We know but a little. We don't know nothing, so your real reliance has to be on him. You know how much you've got to put yourself down in a good way, and how much you've got to humble yourself to realize that your real reliance can never be on you, that your real reliance has to be on God. Because you're just not strong enough to handle the world. It's just too big and too tough for you. You know how really for it to sink down to your heart, for you to really know that you can't manage your own life? You know, most people in AA don't realize they can't manage their own life. They come to AA and then they go out. You know what they do when they go out the doors? They proceed to figure out how to manage their lives. You know, most people don't understand what it says, no human power could relieve their alcoholism. Most people go out and try to find the human power to relieve their alcoholism. Very few people know that God couldn't live if people sought and relied totally on God, utterly on Him, in Alcoholics Anonymous. And then they meet here every day or every other day at discussion meetings and talk about how life isn't treating them right and everything's screwed up and how their management skills aren't. What are they going to do, and try to figure what they should do about this and what they should do about that, when all they have to do is throw everything on God and look to Him. But that sounds like too much like AA stuff and Bible stuff, which is what this thing is all about. Very, very hard to give that stuff up. Very, very hard to be powerless and admit you're powerless. So it says, I was trying to find the answer. I knew there was even more, something I hadn't gotten. And I remember one day, a week or two after I'd come out of the hospital, Bill was at my house talking to my wife and me. We were eating lunch. This and Randy eating tuna fish sandwiches. And I was listening. He was listening. He wasn't even talking. He was listening. Man, how many people actually listen in AA? I was listening and trying to find out why they had this release that they seemed to have. Bill looked across at my wife and said to her, this is what he said, and he heard this. This could have been something that was said, you'd never hear it again, and he heard this. And it was so important to him. He says, Henrietta, the Lord has been so wonderful to me. Yeah, he said the Lord. There was nobody, I guess nobody explained to the people in AA that you're not allowed to talk about Jesus or all that sort of stuff or the Bible. Nobody chastised Bill Wilson. It's still there. Somebody better call up New York about that. Henrietta, the Lord has been so wonderful to me, curing me of this terrible disease, that I just want to keep talking about it and telling other people. You know, I feel, I like that deal because I feel the same way. I guess the same crap happened to me, you know what I mean? You know, if you feel that way, that means the same deal is working in you, the fellowship of the Holy Spirit. That's why we'll meet. That's why people who are in the fellowship of the Holy Spirit will meet each other and know about each other and understand each other, because all this stuff is spiritually discerned. The intellectual man will think it's foolish. Think it's foolish stuff. We'll never understand this. The guy who comes in here who still thinks he's smart, smarter than everybody else, you know, has got the money, the yachts, whatever it is, will never quite get this stuff, because it has nothing to do with what you do with your brain. It has to do with what happens in your heart. It's a spiritual thing. Can't see it. I thought, this is what he thought, he says, I thought, I think I have the answer. Bill was very, very grateful that he had been released from this terrible thing, and he had given God the credit for having done it. And he's so grateful about it, he wants to tell other people about it. That sentence, the Lord has been so wonderful to me, curing me of this terrible disease, that I just want to keep telling about it and telling people about it, has been a sort of golden text for the AA program and for me. You know, when you're great, when you understand and you believe, like Bill believed, that there is a God, and the only reason you're sober is not because you deserve to be sober, but because of His grace. And you believe that on a daily, hourly, by-minute basis, that whatever you have that's good, that's decent, no matter what's going on, your sobriety is because of God's grace. You know, that's a powerful thing, because you always know, no matter where you are, no matter what's going on, that as long as you're sober because of His grace, and He's watching out for you. But there's another way of looking at this thing. And the other way of looking at this thing is, you can look at this, and that's the thing that this guy got when he was 2 weeks sober. When he was 2 weeks sober, because of that statement that wasn't even meant for him, he understood that Bill Wilson gave God all the credit, and that resounded in him. Why it resounds in him and other people fought it, I don't know. I've worked with thousands of men. Why some men get this thing, I can tell you this, has nothing to do with brains, has nothing to do with money, has nothing to do with anything. It's just some just sort of get it and want it. If you want what we have, and you're only going to anything, they get it, they have the desire for that, and it just hits there and it grows, you know what I mean? It's just a seed that grows. And some fight it and never get it. And you can't push it on them, and you can't hammer it into them. You know what I mean? And what happens in Alcoholics Anonymous, because our main thing is what? Not drinking, right? That's what they give out the battalions for, not drinking, right? It's like a driver's license. If you're 16 years old and you're not, you can get a driver's license, right? You could be psychotic. You could be a serial rapist. You could be a mass murderer. You can be nuts in every possible way, but you're 16 years old and you're alive and on the planet. They'll give you a learner's permit, right? Well, in Alcoholics Anonymous, you could be the most miserable son of a gun on the planet Earth wanting to commit suicide every night, just a horrible, miserable person. And man, as long as you don't drink for 6 years, come up here, you're getting your medallion. You understand? You're getting your medallion. That's the deal. And so what happens is this. There are some people, believe it or not, that somehow, some way, through some sort of mechanism, come in here, because you can do it, because we have a fellowship here that supports that, and they come in here and they join the not drinking club. So there's two doors in AA. There's the not drinking door, where you have thousands and thousands of people next to the not drinking door, because it's about that, right? Don't drink and go to meetings. And then you have another door on the other side of the room, and that door is the experience much of heaven rocket in the fourth dimension of existence, you know, door, right? And there's thousands of people next to this door, the not drinking door, and there's like three or four guys in the rocket in the fourth dimension door, the extra credit door, whatever that door is. And every once in a while, you see a guy walk from this side of the room, the right side, the not drinking club, to the rocket of the fourth dimension door. You very rarely see a guy going from the rocket of the fourth dimension door to the not drinking club. But you see, you can come in here. As a matter of fact, it's more likely than not, because alcoholics are defiant, and you have to understand our alcoholic thinking seems the only normal way of thinking. So we're as crazy and lunatic as we are. Understand something. We're comfortable being crazy. Understand, you're being angry at somebody. You're being crazy. You're resenting somebody. You're doing everything that you do that ultimately causes you aggravation in your life with other people and breaks havoc in your life between yourself and other people. All the thoughts you have, all the resentments you have, all the lack of sleep, everything that you're doing and you haven't doing for years, you do naturally, automatically. You don't have to go to meetings, and you feel comfortable about it, and if somebody says stop doing it, you hate them. That's the disease, that's the spiritual disease you're working on. And every time somebody comes up to you and tries to teach you how to do it completely differently, it's like if you're right hand, it's like somebody saying do everything now with your left hand. You resist it and you don't want to do it. And that's the deal. That's the true disease you're really fighting on this deal. And so what happens is you got this thing going on, and you got people that come in here, and what are we learning? We learn, you know, if you're an alcoholic, you're scared, you're worried about yourself, you're always on edge, you're always thinking, you're always living by your wits, you're always trying to figure out what is he thinking, what is she thinking, where am I going to go? You're invited to the party, who's going to be there? I can't go because I don't like him and everything. There's so much stuff you got to think of to protect yourself from being hurt and something happened to you because you can't trust anybody because it's always a moving target and there's nobody in your life that you really depend upon. They're all going to let you down because they're all worthless shits anyway, you know, and the only person who cares about you is you. You got to protect yourself, and you're not really up to the job, but you're not telling anybody about that deal, you know what I mean? And you know, that's your deal, and somebody says throw it out on God, how's God going to pay my rent? How's God going to do this? How's God going to do that? And you resist that deal, you know what I mean? And so you come in here and you stop drinking, and you stop drinking, and you sit there. Not you. You think you're doing step two and three, but you're not even there. And somewhere along the line, you can actually go to AA meetings and stay sober for 3, 4, 5, 6, 10 years or more and not really turn your life over to God utterly. It's true. You can do it. Trust me, I've been around for a long time. One of the great things about being around for a long time is running into people who have 20 years and are miserable and thumb-sucking crybabies and going nuts, and you realize they don't really believe in God and they've never really trusted him and they are not certain that he's working in their lives. They're just doing the AA two steps. They're just going to meetings and doing all that and not hanging around with God. They managed not to drink. And you know what they've told themselves? You know what they've decided? They've decided, you know what Bill Wilson and this guy said? You know what they said in there? What they said was, the only reason I'm sober is because of God. He says, the only reason I'm sober is because of God's grace. And if you're only sober because of God's grace and you believe that, then every day you're giving thanks, every second you're giving thanks to him. You're a grateful, grateful person. You're always, no matter what's happening in your life, you're saying, but thank God I'm sober. Yeah, my son died, this died, that side, but man, as horrible as that is, thank you, God, for allowing me to be sober. You have a grateful heart. But what happens is there's another type of alcoholic that decides that he's sober because he's doing it, because I'm going to meetings, because I'm doing this, because I'm doing that, because he deserves, because I'm sober, because I'm spiritual, not really, because I have the quality of being spiritual, because I'm just sober, because I'm sober. And that person doesn't have to give thanks to anybody except himself. He doesn't have to be grateful for anybody except himself. You understand what I'm saying? And you know something, that kind of person after a period of time doesn't really need to go to that many meetings because, you know, he's staying sober because, you know, of him. Or he doesn't have to have a sponsor and ask the sponsor what does he think he has to do because he's staying sober because of him. Now here's the thing, when the two little puppies start out in the litter, you understand? They're both sober. You understand? You can't tell the difference between the one that's grateful to God and the one that's grateful to himself. You know, you understand? But as the years go by, and as they say in the sixth step, as the separation happens, this guy over here gets more and more self-involved, less and less does he grow, and he's the one that ultimately drinks after 6 years, 7 years, or 8 years. He's the one who stops going to meetings. You know, you hear people say, why did he drink? Because he stopped going to meetings. Well, that's not the point. The point is, why did he stop going to meetings? He stopped going to meetings because he's not grateful. Why did he stop sponsoring? Why should he sponsor? Why should he give back anything? He did it all on himself, you know. He doesn't have to be grateful to anybody. So what happens is you have to understand the God thing works is because that's the thing that keeps you, in any event, that keeps you grateful. It keeps you humble and grateful. That's the deal. And that's what makes the process work. And so we're going to end this thing up because God forbid I should go over. It says on page 96, Dr. Bob noting that there were no 12 steps at that time. He's talking about between 1935, because most of this stuff is going to be talking about what they were actually doing, their path. 12 steps at that time, and that our stories didn't amount to anything to speak of, later said that they were convinced that the answer to their problems was in the good book, the Bible. To some of the older ones, the parts that we found absolutely essential were the Sermon on the Mount, the 13th chapter of 1 Corinthians, and the book of James. That's not me talking. If you don't like what I'm saying, you got to write New York. This is Dr. Bob, this is conference approved. The founders found these books to be, you ready for this? Not essential, absolutely essential. This is where they got everything from. This is where they got anything from. And we don't have enough time, I was going to read you something out of another book, but the fact of the matter is, by the way, in case you haven't guessed, in one sense, I don't key this thing. This is a step series. I talk about basically my experience over the last 32 years or so. I don't focus this thing on the newest guy in the group. Although I've come to believe, based upon my experience, that sometimes it's the newest guy in the group that appreciates it the most. Believe it or not. You know? Believe it or not. Because they want a message. You know, one of some, they've done the battle out there. They want a message of depth and weight. They want to hear something different that makes sense to them. You with me? And, you know, that kind of deal. So don't be so sure that even though this sounds like a little advanced sort of a, you know, he's talking too much about God and that kind of stuff, this is, in my opinion, the real deal. And so when I'm asked to do this, I don't sort of like, you know, go back to where I was when I was 3 months sober and try to feed this to you like your little children, you know? I mean, you guys, this is important stuff to me. And this is the kind of